Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm very pleased to be joined this afternoon by Ashwini, who has agreed to be with us to talk some more about the focus for 2013 for Sangha, the focus being the cooperative of practice being lit up together. Welcome, Ashwini.
Hey, Jen.
So, as many folks know, because they may have been listening in the day we had a recorded interview with you about the topic, the recording was great, but the technical side that night was very bad. So we couldn't hear much of it at all. So people may have heard some of it on the archives, but just because they may not have, I'd love it if we could just kind of start from the beginning and talk about a little bit about the theme and what brought that about and sort of like that, start there.
Yeah, so I think the first thing is why do we want a focus? And I think the reason for that is that having a focus last year was just so successful for all of us to practice together. And there was such a lot of energy that was released in because we had that focus on deepening practice, and everybody was seeing practice from that perspective, and it was a tremendous building of energy and a release of energy to have sort of a common language and a common focus for us to practice with. So I think it was so helpful to practice overall that we decided that we wanted to carry the theme forward. And then the theme itself was sort of grew out of the year of deepening practice because it brought people so much closer into practice and brought practice so much more into, or people's lives into practice so much, that the suggestion was, it's a Sangha practicing together that releases all this energy, so why wouldn't the theme be the cooperative of practice and what it means to be Sangha?
Yeah, really kind of acknowledging that, you know, it's always been true, but I think the year of deepening practice really underlined it for everyone, that it takes a Sangha. You know, we can't do this incredibly challenging, inspiring work by ourselves, and to realize that the practice that we all have is because each of us is literally, truly part of the cooperative of making that happen. So what fun it would be to have an entire year around that focus.
Yes, and all of the elements of the title were chosen with consideration. So being lit up is what gives life back to life. And it was the focus in the 300 for 1,000 program. And it's really the mechanism or the process by which we move from conditioning into life. And then the together piece is that we have to be supported in this together because that's the only way it works. And when we come from that place, we can see what the elements of a cooperative are that are useful in this practice, which is I'm supported. This is my practice. I have a responsibility for doing it, for representing it, and for making sure that it's there for other people who are going to come behind us.
Yeah.
So when we say the daily recollection, we say homage to the Sangha in all of those elements, and now we get to practice that.
Yeah, well, it's perfect. I get re-excited just listening to you.
Yeah, and then that was at home. I think I wrote this in the newsletter article. I actually asked one of my friends, my mom, what is the meaning of the word Sangha? And it actually comes from two composite roots. One, sam, which means together, and ga, which means to walk. So those people who walk together, that's what Sangha means. And we're walking this path towards liberation.
That's goosebumps material. Wow. And I'm just looking at the webpage that our very talented designer Marie made for the cooperative practice being lit up together. And it has folks, you know, holding hands, and so that walking image is really a good one. That's really nice.
Yes, and you know, the observation that comes up is that, you know, when we live in a conditioned world where the choices that we make are not popular. And the reason that the Buddha has a Sangha is because you need to be supported by those people who are making the same choices for freedom, because you're not understood by anybody else.
Yeah. Ooh. It's so true. No matter how much someone loves you, if they're not consciously walking that same path, they won't necessarily understand why you would want to make that choice.
Right. And this is what I think we'll talk a little bit, I think, further on about the retreat that we want to put together around this to explore this focus. But the core aspect of this exploration together is belonging. And when you think about it, ego is that self that separates us from life, right, from ourselves. And it's really a process of separation. It's a process of feeling alienated and alone and isolated. It's the opposite of belonging.
Yeah.
And so what we're exploring together as Sangha is it's a community to which we belong. So the process of Sangha is the process of belonging to something. And we get to move to that place of unconditional love and acceptance for ourselves in this journey and experience what belonging means and explore what that is. And that's what we're talking about this year. How do we move forward in that journey towards unconditional love and acceptance as a community which is symbolic of our belonging to life?
Wow. And as you say, the support that's required in that, because our conditioned idea of belonging and what I want around that and all of those things is so different from what life offers us and what we actually want in our heart of hearts.
And which we know also.
And which we know,
right.
Yeah. So let's do talk about some of that sort of year-long retreat, some of the elements of that are lined up in terms of supporting people through this year.
Well, we're going to kick it off with the video workshop, and this is free, and everyone's encouraged to register, sign up, and participate. And it will be like we did last year, where the overall philosophy of why we're doing this and what it's all about, we get to explore that with Sherry. So that's the first piece of it. And then the second piece of it is a year-long retreat where the theme of the retreat is the focus of the year. And this is an invitation for people to choose, elect to explore this in the formal ways that the Sangha will explore it together. And it consists of an email class, and the email class is 4 weeks, I think, and it will be around this process of belonging, like what keeps us from moving along the path towards unconditional self-acceptance, and why is Sangha important in that process, and what role do we play as Sangha members in supporting each other in this journey. So that's the exploration in the email class, and it will end with something like what we did last year, which is what is my action plan for the year. The difference between last year and this year is that conditioning often leeches our enthusiasm for a year-long plan. So we decided we wouldn't do a year-long plan. We would do a plan for every quarter. So the email class will end with a plan for what your practice plan for this particular quarter. And then we have 3 workshops where we get to explore this theme around belonging and being lit up in Sangha in those 3 workshops. And at the end of every workshop, we renew our practice commitment or renew our plan for the next quarter.
Perfect. So good to, just recognize we know what conditioning is going to do, so we might as well design the support around thwarting that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think the final component of that, there's a midweek email class check-in as well for people who sign up for the retreat. And then the last component of it is the radio show. And the theme that we've been talking about for that is learning to love learning. And I believe we wrote this in the description for the retreat. But the Buddha taught that, the root cause of suffering is ignorance of our authentic nature. And what the voices tell us is that we are who we are not, and we're so used to listening to that we never question. We have relationships with illusions and dead things, and that sense of curiosity that we have is stamped out of us very early. And so the theme of learning to love learning is really developing the process of curiosity, developing the process of wanting be open to new information, to being okay with making mistakes, to dropping the expert and not getting an A on the class, and just change our relationship with a way to be,
yes,
a different way to be, a way that's not conditioning way to be. And in order to be that way, we have to be in a process of curiosity.
Yes.
And so the radio show is all about supporting us as we choose any piece of content that we want to learn so that we can learn the process of learning.
Yeah, yeah. It's really such a brilliant theme because the life is, we're constantly learning in life. I mean, of course we are, because everything is constantly changing. And so when we're present, when we're here, we're constantly learning. That's the process of being alive, awake. And so, of course, what conditioning tries to do, as you say, is shut that down from such an early age and make us afraid of it, embarrassed, you know, resist it, I don't like it, it's too hard. And so what an exhilarating thing to spend a whole year really looking at that. And as you say, choosing a particular piece of content, it could be anything, to just learn that process of loving that we're constantly learning.
Yeah, and see whatever comes up that prevents us from doing that.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah, so, you know, it's going to be really exciting, and this is what all of Sangha is going to be doing together, and we're all going to be lit up together. So hopefully everybody will sign up for the retreat, and the retreat registration just opened.
Excellent. Very good. And if I'm not mistaken, it has quite a reasonable price tag given all of that. I think the video workshop is the start. As you said, that's a free registration. And then
yep.
I think to participate in everything you just named, is it $300? Is that right?
Yep, that's it. That's 3 workshops and 2 email classes.
All right, well, I'll be signing up after we hang up.
And the radio show.
And the radio show, yeah. Yep. All right, Ashwini, well, anything else you feel like we should throw in there before we turn it over to Michael?
No, I don't think so. But I'm really looking forward to walking in a lit-up place with Sangha.
Me too, so much. And thank you so, so much for being live with us. That was much, much better than the last time. And
good.
Thanks for being with us this afternoon.
Thanks, Jen.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Ashwini. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Justin, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Justin.
Hey, Michael.
How are you?
I'm good, especially after hearing that.
Yes.
My response all the way through is, yay, 2013.
Yes, yes. It's great.
It is. If it's anything like 2012, I think we better strap on our seatbelts.
Yeah, a lot of support there.
A lot of support. And, you know, what I was looking at is one of the things I was looking at they were talking about is the focus that Ashwini mentioned.
Yes.
You know, how much it helps to have a focus like that. And it's really, really so, it seems to me. I was on another call. It was actually the Thursday, the radio show she was talking about on that just then is going to happen on a Thursday night, I believe.
Yes.
Just like this year, to support the 300 for 1,000 program that was a part of this year. And I was on a one of those calls. I think that was what it was, or maybe it was a different call. But what people were talking about, the year of deepening practice, and I think it was universal that's what happened. You know, practice deepened for everybody. It's kind of really magical to have that kind of focus.
Yes.
And so hearing what they're saying, you know, I'm looking forward to things like experiencing belonging and participation and being lit up and, you know, all the things that Ashwini was outlining. Because I think if we apply that focus to it, I think those things are kind of inevitable.
Yeah, yeah. And I get the sense that those are the things that vanquish conditioning.
For sure.
The sense of being together and being a part of. And
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And I suspect that what we'll find is, you know, the year of deepening practice, it isn't going to get left behind at all. It's almost like this is sort of a container that includes that. So your practice will, I think, for the entire Sangha as we do this, I'm betting, will continue to deepen as we all explore, you know, Sangha and belonging and being together and support and all those kind of things that we'll be exploring. You know, it's kind of like it'll widen and deepen at the same time.
Yes, yes. Fabulous.
Yeah, it's really fun, and it's fun too for me to see it being created and with so much intentionality and consciousness as a way to support us all in our practice, and I'm really grateful for that.
Oh yeah, me too. Me too. I can feel the, as you said, I can feel the consciousness and intention that went into creating it.
Yeah, I just feel certain we're all going to benefit just like we did this year.
Great. And I have an announcement or two here.
Okay, super.
So this is a little repetitive, but I don't think we can say it too many times. Ashwini just talked about the year-long Cooperative of Practice retreat, and that's now live on the schedule page, and that's schedule.livingcompassion.org, and it's right there at the top.
Great.
And kicking all of this off will be the free live video workshop with Sherry on Sunday, January 20th.
And that's, is that like 10 to 1, something like that?
Yeah, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Pacific time.
Okay, great.
So East Coasters and Europeans will be welcome too, I'm sure.
Yeah, some other time zones.
Yes, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
You might be up in the middle of the night, but that's fabulous. And the first retreat of the new season is now open for registration. There will be a There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat, and that's offered April 13th through 20th. This is a fabulous 8-day retreat about having compassion for yourself and for everyone.
Yeah, it's really kind of the bread and butter mm-hmm. for us in a lot of ways for practice, I think. Boy, it's amazing that we're talking about There's Nothing Wrong With You retreats again already. It's time to start gearing up.
Yes, it's a great first retreat and also a great retreat to repeat every few years.
Definitely.
And it is very popular, so if you are interested, sign up early. And visit the webpage, schedule.livingcompassion.org, to see the new schedule and to sign up for any of these events.
Yeah, and there's lots of really good stuff in there, some kind of things we haven't done for a while, so well worth checking it out.
Yeah, as I was reading it, I felt like I was at the buffet table with a little bit of this and a little bit of that.
Uh-huh.
Great. And I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. So let's get started.
All right.
First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Michael. Hey, Justin. It's Jodine in San Francisco.
Hey, Jodine.
Hi.
I am so excited. I'm the first caller of 2013.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, this is a big welcome to 2013 show.
Yeah.
You're first in line.
So, let me start my timer so I don't go over my time. So what's been going on for me in practice? There's a lot, and 2012 for me got kind of a slow start, but on a practice note, ended strong. So I really appreciate all the supports. Most recently, I was at the New Year's retreat in Menlo Park, at the new location, and I. Kind of on the momentum from that retreat, I've been looking over, like listening again to some of my recordings from 2012. I've kept up with my recording and listening pretty well, and it's kind of snowballing because I find when it goes by the wayside, I wake up like in some suffering place.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I can go back to my recordings. So currently I'm doing the 30-day retreat for Making a Change for Good, and my commitment is 10 minutes talking with the mentor every day.
Cool.
Which for me ends up being at the end of my day.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing kind of a version of that for a while, and I re-listened to this gem of a recording from May last year that I had completely forgot about. And I think that's one of the values of the recording and listening, because, you know, I can be in this really, I was basically in this really disidentified place and had this amazing insight about my processes, and I was talking about it with the mentor, and then somehow it just got buried somewhere.
Yeah, which it does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much every time. But to have that back there in your recordings, it's almost like, my experience is, I don't know if this is yours, but listening to that can sort of begin to take us back to that same place of disidentification.
Well, it did. Like, because I had been in this kind of grousing, bad mood, kind of bad day, blah, blah, place. And then I listened to that recording, I was just like, wow. I mean, I just couldn't maintain it, you know?
Yeah.
But the thing that, part of the content of that recording for me is what I've been kicking around, and I guess I'm just going to take it on as a koan, but you can tell me what you think about this. It was basically that I was realizing that before practice, conditioning would only allow me to be happy if I was meeting the standard.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Which is that universal conditioning. That's, I think that's probably a part of everybody's, the way everybody's programmed.
Yes. And I have my own little flavor of it, but it's kind of liberating in a way just to be able to state it as process, you know, without my content.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's the key to the whole thing. I mean, basically what that says is, in order to be able to do that, you have to understand on some level, this is not real, this is not true, this is made up, this is just coming from a place that is sort of hurtful to me and doesn't care about me. You know, there's a whole understanding about how life works that goes into an insight like that.
And then following on that, it's like, well, where am I now, kind of, was what I was, sitting with at that time. And what I realized is that there are, you know, we talk about being lit up. We talk about feeling our heart's desires and where life is leading us. And what I've seen around this is that, you know, there were always impulses from my heart that were leading me along and urging me down certain paths, you know, through life. But conditioning was always there too, grabbing on to whatever I did, whatever I could achieve, whatever I was doing, it always had kind of its spin on it.
Yep.
And
a little taint of conditioning essentially takes the whole thing away.
Yeah, like, and I've talked with Sherry about this a number of times, is my career path, for instance. Conditioning has not let me be happy with a perfectly good job in which I utilize my education and, you know, it builds on what I trained for when I was in school and everything. And it makes that a constant source of disappointment and disillusionment for me, because I'm not in charge of the organization that I work in.
Right. Yeah. So it's manufacturing something that is not there at all. Yeah. And putting it onto that situation in order to to turn it into its opposite. So it's almost like it uses the energy, if you don't mind kind of talking in that way, the energy that's available in that, you know, the energy of satisfaction and gratitude and sort of going with what life has offered and the happiness that comes from that. It's like it's using that same energy and turning it into something to be unhappy about based on this idea that's completely fabricated and has nothing to do with anything.
Yeah, so that's what I was in the bad mood about when I was listening to that recording. I was like, oh, my job.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to that recording. But the thing that's, I guess, puzzling me is that I also have a sense of not really not contributing in my work life, this part of the content, there's something, you know, trying to remove the conditioning, it somehow feels like in my heart I haven't kind of found my stride. I haven't hit my, I haven't hit on something, or it's really hard to describe this.
Well, yeah, and the obvious question that comes up with something like that is this the same, essentially, as I'm unhappy because I'm not in charge? Or
exactly.
Exactly, yeah. Or is this actually coming from a centered place where life is giving the information?
Yeah, it's like, is life calling me to something else?
Well,
that's what I'm sitting with right now.
Yeah. One thing, I mean, who knows the answer to that? I mean, that would have to be something that you'll find that out as you go through. But here's one little thing you might consider. I bet you anything that life is not calling you to think about that.
Okay. Can you say more about that?
From what you've described, I think we could say, tell me if you agree with this, you're called to be present in your work in a way in which it will naturally produce satisfaction, contentment, gratitude, all those things. Like as you were saying
mm-hmm.
before, you know, you're in a perfectly good job. It matches
mm-hmm.
What you were trained for. It sounds like you even like it.
Yes. Yes.
And so, mm-hmm. you know, what
it's
conditioning?
It's meaningful to me. It's
meaningful
yeah.
to you. Mm-hmm. And so, what conditioning was doing was having you think about the work instead of just being in the work, we might say. And that's what was producing
mm-hmm.
that happiness. So you
mm-hmm.
might consider the same sort of look at the same sort of process around. Okay, well, what are you called to do in your life? You know, if you're thinking about that in that same way, you're thinking about it's conditioning is trying to get you to think about your job.
Okay.
One thing for sure that's going to happen is it's going to attempt to ruin your life in the way that it's attempting to ruin your job.
Mhm. Okay.
You see what I mean?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like inside the system, there's nothing but the dark room.
Exactly. And the way the dark room
yeah.
is created is through thinking about things. And, of course, we're not really actually thinking about things. We're in a conversation with conditioning about things, and that's what we call thinking. And that
oh, yeah.
conversation, because we're in a conversation with this, I don't know, we could talk about it as an entity or something, you know, this entity that we call egocentric karmic conditioning that has as its fundamental motivation to sabotage our lives and to cause us to suffer.
Yes.
Then we're guaranteed, as you say, to get into the dark room. So as an
okay.
alternative, what if you hold that, like you're saying, you hold that as a koan, what is my life calling me to? And you work to discover that by being present to the life that you have.
Beautiful. Yes. Okay.
You see? Because I
yeah.
bet you anything, as you know, if you're in a conversation with conditioning, there's no opening for any information to get to you from life, because like, you know, the all the apertures are clogged up with the voices.
Yeah.
But if you're there just kind of being present to the life you have, practicing, you know, being there, being in it, feeling grateful for it, enjoying it, you know, all those kind of things, I bet, you know, that's what's going to put you in a place to have those moments where things drop in you and you realize, oh, I see. And then there's the next step that's laid out in front of you.
Okay. Yeah, that would be great. Okay, well, thank you very much. I went over time, so I'm going to sign off.
Okay. All right, well, thanks a lot. Congratulations
yeah, thank
on being
you.
The first caller of 2013.
Thanks. Good night.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jodine. You're listening to Open Air. Justin, we're going to take a break now for the first sponsor ads of 2013.
All right. Okay.
Okay, thanks.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Hi, this is Scott from Porch Dog Software. Today we're talking with Lanny, one of Porch Dog's favorite clients. Lanny, what do you think Open Air listeners might want to know about working with Porch Dog?
Well, Scott, I think they might want to know that you write all kinds of software for Macs and iPhones and iPads and for all types of companies, big ones and small ones like mine. And you do your work with a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah. You know, one of the things we love about Open Air is the energy and enthusiasm in every show. We try and get lit up about everything we do here at Porch Dog Software, too.
Everything?
Yep. Especially the things we don't like.
Sweet.
Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller, Justin.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael and Justin. It's Janice calling, and I'm all snowed in on the top of a mountain.
That sounds pleasant.
Well, the pleasant thing is I'm not sick with the really nasty virus anymore. There was like that for a couple of weeks.
Mm.
And the wood stove is working again.
Mm-hmm.
And
all right, sounds
the
good.
The dog's feeling a wee bit better, and so everything seems like a huge blessing right now.
That's nice.
Yeah, not taking anything for granted.
So what's going on in your practice?
Well, I wanted to just mention that Sangha means everything to me, and I just love that there's so many tools with Sangha. And I have two little local sanghas because where we come in winter, we have a sangha, and where I live normally, there's one. And then there's just this wonderful reaching out with guidance calls and the radio show and reflective listening and all that's offered. So I feel really deeply touched, and I'm really looking forward to this coming year.
Yeah, me too. And it's quite, I think I'm with you on all that. I think it's pretty remarkable, and even we might say amazing, that it's set up the way that it is. You know, it wasn't, when I first came to the monastery, it wasn't that way at all. It's you just about had to come to the monastery in order to practice, you know, to really practice with Sangha. And boy, that is so not the case anymore. And you can be anywhere in the world and feel a part of something great. And in a really kind of interactive way, be able to participate in it.
And I was, while I was sick, I felt really quite cut off in some ways because Christmas and New Year's, there wasn't a radio show and the DPAP show had finished. And I was too sick to really, for 4 days with a fever, just not even get out of bed. So to connect with others, and yet I had reflective listening buddy calls, and I just dialed or I just answered, I just showed up, and despite all the aches and the pains and everything that was going on, I just felt like I could even be present with that.
Yeah, that's great. You know, the other thing we have, this came up for me as Jodine was speaking too, that really helps with this, even though it's not interacting with another person, is the recording and listening practice. Because there's a way in which we're connecting with another person in the form of like the mentor or, kind of the life that shows up on our recordings. But for me, at least, it can fulfill some of that very same need, the need for connection, the need for belonging, the need for mentoring and guidance in an interesting way, even just with ourselves and the help of a little recording device, we can sort of create a little sangha of one in the midst of a larger sangha.
And it's interesting you're saying that because at the cabin, I don't even have like a speakerphone. And what I was doing was just recording my side of my reflective listening when I was speaking.
Uh-huh.
And so I couldn't really hear the other side. And even that was beneficial to listen to.
Yeah.
Because you know, I could see the process of speaking and just watching.
Yeah, that's great. You know, I don't know if you know this, but there have been people who have done that on purpose, and because then in the gaps when your reflective listening buddy is reflecting,
mm-hmm.
you can reflect as you're listening to that recording.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, I never thought of that. That's great.
I thought that was incredibly clever too when somebody invented that. That's fun because then you can have a little reflective listening practice with yourself, and also probably help that part whoever was speaking originally feel really, really heard once again.
Yes, yes. And I was listening to just that advertising that just came on before I was unmuted, and it just said, you know, being lit up about things, you know, even things that you wouldn't be lit up about. You know, I thought, yeah, just being with whatever is here.
Yeah, because whatever is here for us, isn't it?
It is.
Even if the ego doesn't like it, and often ego doesn't like the things that are the most here, you might say as a gift to us from life. But it's a very fortuitous attitude of mind that can see everything that way, can see everything as a gift and something that's really here for me.
Well, it's kind of a gift tonight that the snowstorm came, because generally we drive down the mountain and the roads were so bad we couldn't go to our sangha tonight. So it's like the only time probably in 3 months that I'll be able to phone in and to be unmuted was quite a surprise.
Uh-huh. It's perfect. It always is.
Yes. And I just wanted to say that when I was so sick, I was just focusing. I wasn't getting into the story. I was just focusing on the sensations in my body and watching them moving. There was a kind of point where I felt like I just gave up on life. I just I had no idea what was going to happen, and it was a very strange sort of giving over. And something has shifted for me, because I noticed that there was in other areas in my life that there's been a lot of just in the last few weeks from that. It's just kind of a stepping back and letting go.
That's neat. In my experience, that's one of the gifts of being sick, especially being kind of really sick, because I remember I had pneumonia here at the monastery one time and got really, really, really sick. And, there's a point at which there's no longer the energy to support the voices.
Right.
Not because of any intention or even directing the attention or anything like that. It's just there isn't the energy for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like you had something of that experience too. And then, you know, then there's just this space. There's just space there to just be in and experience in that is often very difficult to access when we have a lot of energy and conditioning is right there, you know, riding that energy and gobbling it all up.
Yeah, it was like just being too exhausted to get involved with ego.
Yeah, and that giving over, I mean, that is truly is the best. I mean, we might even say that's kind of what we're going for in a way. And like I've noticed that, like maybe I'll be up against something that's really, really difficult and struggling with that. And then it's a lot like being sick in a way when we, you know, just can't resolve it, can't get past it, can't let go of it. And then we just there's a point at which there's just no choice but, oh, well, I just give up. And then in that giving up is a giving over. So like giving it over to life, and then suddenly, you know, there, right there is exactly what we're looking for. You know, the peace, that space, the belonging, the connection, the guidance, you know, everything we're looking for right there. But we have to sort of give up ego and give over our lives to life in order for that to be available.
Well, that clarified it for me. Thank you very much. Yeah, it felt kind of like that. And I did notice that things came up, like there was at some point where, you know, just anger arising and huge frustration. It felt like rage, and I didn't know where it came from. But instead of my general thing would be not to accept it and want to suppress it, that to just really, really recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, I didn't kind of like act on it, but I did speak about what it was.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't want to like reinforce any of that negativity,
right.
But it was surprising that I didn't just block it all either.
Yeah, well, that's really helpful, isn't it? So I think what you're saying is you allowed it to be there. You didn't go to, this is what usually happens, you know, there's a piece of conditioning like anger, then we go to a different piece of conditioning like judging the anger, and then we've got conditioning against conditioning, and there's really no room for, you know, the center, you know, the actual person. But instead, here's the anger, and it gets allowed. It's not judged. It's not made into something that's wrong. It doesn't have any meaning in it about you. You're just allowing it to be there, just kind of noticing it, holding it, and allowing it to pass away whenever it's ready to do that.
Yeah. And it was really helpful just even picking up some of the odd book that I had, just looking at There's Nothing Wrong With You, or even The Buddha Facing the Wall, just hearing the interviews from the monks for so many years ago,
mm-hmm.
and just realizing, oh, this isn't personal.
Mm-hmm. Yes, right. It has nothing to do with you, really, does it?
So that was all good to see. And, well, thanks for clarifying.
Okay, well, thanks for calling in. And, yeah, I've got a kind of a nice picture of you up on top of the mountain with all that snow. Hope you enjoy it.
It's a severe blizzard right now. We've had more than 3 meters of snow this season.
Goodness gracious.
It packs down.
Okay, take care, Janice.
Good night, everybody.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Janice. You're listening to Open Air. And we have another caller, Justin.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself? Next caller, are you there? Try another one. Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is George.
Hey, George.
Hey.
How's it going?
Well, I guess I'm in my usual takeover situation here. At least that's what Sherry calls it, where I just kind of get depressed and anxious and suffering.
Okay. And you're in that right now?
Mental and some physical suffering to go along with it, too, you know, aches and pains all of a sudden, become. And I usually, my pattern has been this happens sometime in the fall, and then it usually goes through the winter, and then sometime in the spring I come back into at least what I experience is the room with the lights on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I'm in the room with the lights on for several months, and then, you know, again. And, you know, at first it's like, oh, no, not this again. And, oh, no, here we go again. I thought I was done with this because when I'm in the light room, it seems like, well, this is Of course, you know.
Right.
There's no reason to be anywhere else.
Right.
Life is wonderful. I'm in love with life. I'm enjoying everything, and so you know, when I get caught, I guess. And it sneaks up, you know, it sneaks up. It starts in my dreams, which is a perfect place because I'm, I guess, more vulnerable there
mm-hmm.
than in, you know, waking consciousness. And just it's like a battle in a way, uh-huh. back and forth for maybe a couple of months.
Can I ask
and
you
then
about
finally,
that?
Huh?
Can I ask you about that?
Yeah.
Well, I'm curious. It's interesting that how predictable it is. It sounds like this. It's
yeah.
Kind of, your interstate is like our weather here in California.
Yeah, right.
Kind of a wet season, dry season.
Yeah,
kind of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What I'm curious about is, you know, like let's say that is kind of just the way it is. You know, you
mm-hmm.
in the summer you have one. You're one person basically, in the winter you're another person,
mm-hmm.
and it sounds like you like being in the summer, the summer person, rather than the winter
mm-hmm.
person.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
But my question is it necessary to suffer in the winter, even though this is going on?
Well, it's interesting because I seem to be, my best way to describe it is sometimes I'm just totally identified with this subpersonality or whatever it is that's suffering.
Okay.
You know, that it's like it certainly seems like a very young part of me and, you know, who is, you know, kind of swallowing conditioning's line, hook, line, and sinker, and, you know, is being, you know, really browbeaten about
okay.
all sorts of things.
Yep.
And,
okay.
And when I'm there, it's just, you know, full bore suffering.
Yep.
But I've also noticed this growing ability to not take it personally.
There you go.
To be in another space where I'm still, you know, the body sensations are still there. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I'm still feeling, oh, you know, just this huge loss of energy and, you know, kind of stomach pains or just, you know, anxiety and all of that, but I'm noticing it all going on. You know, I'm hearing the voices and I'm seeing that, you know, what the voices are doing, and especially when I'm out, you know, taking a walk and listening to my recordings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it definitely puts me in that place. So the suffering lessens to some degree. Not completely by any means, and it.
Well, I don't know. George.
But
I'm not sure about that, George, because, I mean, I think what you're saying is that the sensations are still there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's not the same as suffering.
No, it isn't.
I mean, without the story, I mean, the whole thing is. I think it sounds like it's happening within kind of a mega story, if that's the right way of saying that. You know, where this is something that you don't like, that happens all the time, you don't want to happen, it's a battle. You know, I wonder, without all that framing,
mm-hmm.
which it sounds like has been practiced for some time, and I think it's probably being supported quite a lot by the voices, but I wonder,
right.
without that, if it even would be suffering, or if it would just be different. Kind of like the weather.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think about, you know, when
I get a sense of that, and more, I get more and more a sense of that. And the other thing I noticed was that I noticed that the periods of the light room continually get longer.
Mm-hmm.
More weeks in the light room and less weeks on the other side of it, which is interesting too.
That is interesting, yeah. And that's a nice conclusion to put on that it's interesting. If you make that something to go for, then that's just more of the same, I would imagine.
Well, there is definitely a subpersonality that's going for that,
mm-hmm.
and that's keeping score. In fact, I literally keep score every day of my moods. And that's the only way I know at this particular time that, in fact, it is getting longer and longer. It's the only way I would know, because I've been keeping score from day to day to day all through the year. So I look back on it. In fact, as I was getting toward the end of the year, I was hearing this conversation from self-hate saying, well, that was a, you know, you didn't do anything this past year. You know, I mean, there, you know, it was just basically saying that I'd wasted a year and, you know, there was nothing to show for it and so on. And then I sat down and said, well, wait a minute. And I looked at my mood chart and I said, well, first of all, I've listened to you a lot less this year than I did, you know, in the past 10 years.
Yay.
And it, and yeah, and it's, and it, it's grown more and more all the time. And then of course the yeah buts came. Yeah, but on your 301,000, you never got anywhere on that. And I said, no, wait a minute. You know, I entered this singing contest. I there was like 700 or 800 people in it. I came out in the top 12.
Wow.
And going for the $10,000 first prize, which I didn't get. But you know, and then I got my first. Well, it was a 1 day job, which. But my first actual professional, you know, musicianship job.
Wow.
Doing a show in a, it was actually in a psych ward in New York City.
That's cool. There's a lot going on outside.
Some of the best people are in those psych wards, really. They were wonderful.
So there's a lot that's going on that is not in keeping with the story that conditioning is putting on top of this mood shift that happens. Hey, George, I have a suggestion for an experiment.
Yeah.
If you're up for it.
Sure.
And this is not to try to make anything happen, even though it could sound like it's not to try to change anything that's going on. I just think it would be really, really interesting in terms of the relationship with the voices that you're having over this phenomenon that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing this thing. It's with the recording listening. I call it immersion through listening, you know, immersion in practice or immersion in life through listening, where basically I have that thing on all the time when I'm not focused on some other activity, like I've got a work project or something that I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even necessarily listening intently, but just having it there, having the, just like a nonstop, sort of a environment of compassion and clarity and like that, all the stuff that's in the recordings. And there's my recordings I'll listen to, and there's also lots of things available, especially the open air archives, you know, other things from practice that are listening things that you can dial into, or other inspirational things that you know about.
Yeah.
It would be fascinating to do an experiment for a period of time like that with what you've got going on. Because what I'm speculating is it would make it a lot more difficult for the voices to construct the reality that they're constructing.
I think
that might be, it might be fascinating to see what about it is actually real and what's not real in contrast to this more centered information that's coming in through your recordings.
Yeah, that sounds, I think you're absolutely right. I think it would be a great experiment to do. And my prediction would be that it would actually be a successful one.
Yeah, I bet it would be. Now, you can't approach it with some idea of an outcome.
I know.
Because
I know.
That's more of the same. I bet you anything that's a part of what causes, I don't know if it causes the phenomenon that happens, but definitely causes the suffering. So it can't be that. It's got to be an experiment. It's like, it would be really interesting to basically surround myself every waking moment with practice.
Yeah.
So something to consider.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. That's a good note to wrap it up. Good.
Okay. Great. Well, thanks for calling in, George, and thanks for the willingness too. To call in, given what's going on, that comes from this other place we're talking about, I'm sure.
Yep. Great.
Okay. Thanks. Well, good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, George. You're listening to Open Air. Justin, I love that assignment. That's an awesome one.
Yeah, I think so too. It's been profound for me.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. It's interesting that it's, in my experience, what I was saying about the, not necessarily intently listening, but just sort of having it there. Because I'm listening also, but it's like I'm walking around. You know Pigpen in the Peanuts cartoons?
Yes.
You know, he's got that little cloud kind of falling around. It's kind of like that.
Yeah.
Well, there's a little kind of practice cloud that's going all around because it's like being surrounded by practice all the time. And in a kind of an amazing way, I feel connected. I feel dialed in. I feel like I'm in relationship with life. And there's nothing going on other than I think that the attention is just there's always something to put the attention on instead of conditioned mind.
Yes, yes. And it's very immersive, as you said, because it's just everywhere with you.
Yeah, it really is. I actually asked Sherry about it a little while ago, and she made an interesting comment. She said, you know, if it would be great, I was asking her about silence and, you know, is it important for there to be silence as well? And she said something along the lines of, you know, it would be great if we could just be in silence and be here.
Yes.
But almost nobody can do that.
Yes.
And so in the times when, like here, you know, we have a schedule we follow. It's a very engrossing, engaging schedule.
Yes.
And there's always something to do. It's very active. We're always moving around. And so there's always a focus. And so while that's going on, there's not a whole lot of room for, you know, the voices and suffering to come in. It's in the areas that are kind of more amorphous, where there isn't that kind of focus.
Yes.
And she was saying, you know, when, you know, in those times, that's when we need to have the recordings going, because that's when it's just so difficult to keep the attention here and live in connection with life instead of getting drawn off into all those unhappy places that we know so well.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And with technology today, it just makes it so simple.
It really does. It really does. Yeah. Yeah. And we're blessed in just all the supports that are there, as people have been saying. You know, just having like the Open Air Archives, for example, you know, I don't know, thousands of hours probably at this point of guidance, you know, just available. And, you know, why not have that? Why not immerse ourselves in that instead of rehashing that old situation that happened that was just so horrible, or, you know, kind of planning out the next 5 weeks, even though there's no way in heck that's going to happen. You know, all the kind of other crazy things we do.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Justin, we're going to break for an important message, and then we'll be right back.
Okay, great.
The Year of Deepening Practice has produced a new support opportunity for people of all levels of practice. A team of Zen awareness coaches guided by Sherry Huber, who offer individual coaching to support awareness practice. This coaching program is designed to help strengthen the inner voice of self-compassion and peace, and places a special emphasis on recording and listening. Whether you're brand new or a long-timer, awareness coaching can be the extra support your heart desires. As the Buddha said, we must each work out our own salvation diligently. Zen awareness coaches can assist you wherever you are in your practice. For more information, visit sanghamarket.com. Look for the Little Zen Monk under the Services section. These services are offered with loving kindness to support those wishing to deepen their practice.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller, Justin.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Greta. I'm going to switch to the phone. Hang on just a second. Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, hey, Greta.
Hi, Justin, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm just appreciating practice support and just called in to connect and make sure I got the latest since we had kind of a break over the holidays.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I kind of got to get our fix in, don't we?
Right. Want to make sure I start the new year off right.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah, that's a good point. Want to start it off with, especially in the year of Sangha, with participation.
Exactly. Exactly. So one thing I've been noticing, just how important those supports are for me, because what I see with my kind of my persistent health issue is I have a part of me that just believes in that it's going to change, that there's somewhere I'm going to get where it's going to be different, and then I don't know what. You know, then everything's going to be all right. Then I'm going to be able to do all these things. It's a, you know, it's just a, it's the if-then process. It's a really big setup from conditioning.
It is, isn't it? It's a total setup for disappointment and unhappiness.
Right. And what happens, and what I notice, because I've just been going through this, is I'll have a little time where I do feel good, and then I'll start to feel bad again.
Mm-hmm.
And there's somebody that gets completely blindsided by that, even though it's happened for years. And what I'm seeing, I've been reading the Fear book also as part of my practice, and what I'm seeing just by catching on to some things described in that book is really how I get so identified with the first person, the one who wants to feel better, because who wouldn't want to feel better? And I don't really, then I'm not there, because I'm not centered, I'm not there for the part of me who gets blindsided when I feel bad and is just so hugely disappointed that things went a different direction.
Yeah, that is so good to see, isn't it? You lose the big picture.
Right.
Yeah, you lose the whole kind of thing that happens by becoming that part of you who sounds like it's so excited about feeling good.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's just like a little kid, you know, a little no real idea about how things work and what leads to what and what the history has been and what to watch out for, just in the moment, but in the moment in a way that I don't even know if we actually say in the moment, but seemingly in the moment, in a way that it's just not aware of what all of the machinations of conditioning and everything else that's going on, including the physical realities.
Right, right. Just how, I think that's a really good point, just how a little kid gets lost in what they're doing and they don't see the consequences or that there could be some other situation. They are just, their world is not that big. Like,
exactly,
so that's a good point.
Yeah, they're just focused on one very tiny experience that they're having.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, I know that I have seen this a lot, and I obviously have to keep seeing it, but it's so conditional that all my well-being is wrapped up in feeling a certain way, and, you know, then the legs go out from under me when I don't have that experience.
Yeah, and that's so unkind.
Yeah.
To do that to somebody, you know, especially somebody who's not feeling good a lot of times.
Right.
You know, it's just adding that disappointment and that getting blindsided over and over again to somebody who's attempting to live a good life when as they're not feeling good is just, boy, that's just so unkind. Yep.
And then what I see about it, looking at fear, is then that getting blindsided just feeds into this cycle of fear because you never know when it's going to happen. You know, I don't know what's going to change and how I'm going to feel, and I can't plan anything. And it just kind of gets into this vicious cycle of that person being so afraid of the other shoe dropping that she's getting paralyzed. And, you know, then I get very strongly identified with that person and the suffering that's going on there.
Right. And so if we look at it from ego's point of view, the point, you know, we're trying to mess up this human's life and make her really unhappy. you know, what we have to do is keep her identified,
mm-hmm.
right? And it doesn't particularly matter what she's identified with. You know, probably when you're in the feeling good place, you feel good. I mean, you're
right.
identified with somebody who is sort of happy about the way things are going or something like that. But from conditioning's point of view, that's just as good as being identified in the disappointment.
Right.
But we have to kind of, for this person, we have to kind of keep things moving because, you know, it's not going to work to try to get her stuck in one identity forever because she's just going to get tired of that, you know, and it's just she's going to pop out of it. So we've got to keep things moving, keep things changing around and getting her identified here, then here, then here, then here, and sort of orchestrating the whole thing so that she never catches on that that's the bottom line. You know, her experience is changing all the time, but the one constant is she's always identified.
Well, that is a really good way of putting it so I can see it more clearly. That's
mm-hmm.
really helpful.
And that model that we're talking about, but you know, the of the child, it seems to me like it offers a really nice way of working with kind of what's going on. Because, you know, obviously the alternative in that is to remain a grown-up who can keep that perspective and remain in an awareness of, you know, what's happening, what can happen, what does happen, what's needed, how to take care of the different people who are there, like that, you know, that larger place instead of getting pulled into the different places of identification.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So that has crossed my mind. I have different levels of success in practicing with it because one of the, you know, catches for all of us is that the physical is really real.
Yeah, that's tricky, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's kind of on the upside or the downside.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, like, as you look at that, can you see ways of maybe setting things up to keep it in your awareness, keep that big picture in your awareness so you don't get swept up in the stories about how you're feeling?
Well, a lot of what I do, you know, some of the things that have been talked about tonight is just keeping myself in the mind of practice.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's connecting through the calls or listening to the archives or recording and listening, I try to keep myself in the mind of practice as much as possible.
Uh-huh.
And what I'm I've been looking at this for, you know, through the year of deepening practice and looking at how I'm going to, you know, kind of holding the question right now of how I'm going to pursue this in 2013, you know, what are some of the other things I want to do for myself? But the one thing that I have started to do is to try and have a commitment to a gratitude practice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the one thing I can know is, you know, I'm still walking, I'm still talking, you know, I'm still alive.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of there's a lot of gratitude just there.
That's nice.
So I've been I've just really started seeing that I can work with the fear and work with the gratitude practice. And but I think that I will take your question under consideration because I have been just really trying to look at how to work with this and to try to provide for those parts of myself that opportunity to come to center instead of me always being drawn out.
Yeah.
That
yep.
was a peace quote within the last couple weeks that I printed off, which is, you know, everything's welcome here, just we don't want to go off out there.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? That's
mm-hmm.
it. And everything really is welcome, the hard feelings and the feelings that are less hard. And you're probably all over this already, but of course, this kind of situation is tailor-made for the recording and listening practice,
right?
Or the recording and listening practice tailor-made for this, because you can be you can put it on a bunch of recordings that you're listening to regularly. Say, well, this is how it works. You know, first this happens, then this happens, and this happens, and just having that information cycle through. Like I do it. I don't know what kind of device you use, but I can do it on a way that, you know, where it shuffles. And so, like, I see something that's really important to remember, like, think what you're talking about. You know, there's a tendency to get identified in this person when I feel good and then get blindsided. So put that on about 10 recordings and then just have it cycling through.
Mm-hmm.
So even when you're not in that place and that's not going on, you're constantly getting reminded. And so
right.
It's like kind of building up like a background or like it's almost like experience, like building up experience of this process so that when it starts to actually happen, then it's there. You know, that understanding is there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And I think this call is really helpful in, you know, putting it, just taking another layer off, you know, making it a little more clear and a little more
mm-hmm,
clear.
Mm-hmm,
and
yeah.
I think you're right that I can dedicate a track on my device just to this issue. I have been, you know, just thinking, okay, well, I had a program that I was going to do, and I kind of got away from it, but I saw the need to get back to it because this very situation occurred. And so, yeah, well, I could do a 30-day retreat about it, and I can do what
yeah.
you're suggesting, record and listen and have that. So I can see through the process.
For sure, yeah. And that
yeah.
is so good. I mean, that no matter what happens with the actual, you know, what with your body and what goes
right.
on with that, that being engaged with it from that place will be life-giving.
Right, right, right. Oh, yeah, for sure. I start to be really a little more curious than anything, and that is much more helpful.
It really is. Yeah, there's this thing keeps coming to mind, this old Christian thing where people used to talk about, maybe they still do, I don't know, but that that God leads in two ways. God leads through consolations, which are, you know, the good stuff, the stuff we enjoy, and leads through the hard things. You know, I think they're probably talking about it as suffering in a different way than we talk about suffering. And that occurs to me that that's kind of a lot of what you're looking at, in that, you know, life is sometimes the gift is something that we really love and we really enjoy. Sometimes the gift is something that's really hard, but it's still a gift. You know, it's still an opportunity to wake up and to kind of join with life and find out what this life is all about. And, that's for me, that's the place of gratitude that you're talking about, and also the place of exploration that you're speaking from.
Well, exactly. And what you're saying is exactly my experience this year. I have had such a year of deepening practice and such a year of physical issues.
Yep.
You know, I could never have imagined it, but I actually am incredibly grateful.
I know. It's incredible, isn't it, that we can be grateful for something like that. To me, that speaks to the power of practice.
Absolutely.
I mean, that is a massive shift in life orientation from the one that conditioning prescribes for us all the time.
Yes,
you know, that we
right.
could be grateful for something that is hard and painful and difficult because it deepens our relationship with life. That is amazing.
Yes, well, something to look forward to for 2013.
Yeah, and with 2013, who knows what will happen, but, you know, it's the year of Sangha, so there's going to be some support, belonging, things like that will happen with the same issue, I bet.
Yep, exactly. Well, thank you very much. It's been great to talk to you. Thank you, Michael.
Likewise. Thanks a lot, Greta.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Greta. You've been listening to Open Air. It's been my great privilege tonight to be here with you, Justin. Thanks for being here.
Oh, you're quite welcome. My pleasure.
Yeah, so let's do it again.
Okay.
Great. Thanks,
Take care. Have a great night.
You too. Good night.
Okay. Bye-bye.